You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Standifer, and as always, I'm your host. And today with us, we have Kelly back with us again, and she's going to be talking with us about her experiences as far as handling the settling of an estate of someone close to her and what that looked like in her case. Now, there are a lot of different ways to settle an estate, or there's different ways that people can have set up before they pass away to have that estate settled. And we're going to be touching on some of those, but mostly just talking about Kelly's experience today. But Kelly, thanks for coming back and chatting with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So in case people didn't see the first episode you were on, do you want to introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your history in banking?
Sure. So my name is Kelly Jensen. I am currently a senior vice president of our mortgage and consumer lending division. I've been at the bank since 2001. I started out when I was out of college, and I started out as a personal banker, and I just kind of have grown throughout my years here at the bank, and that's what has brought me to where I am now. So all of my experience that I have in lending in the mortgage industry has been at the bank here, and I've been able to expand it quite a bit just with different offerings and that sort of thing that we've done over the past few years.
Awesome. And yeah, she was my boss for the several years that I was doing consumer lending for a while here at the bank. So we know each other pretty well, so we should hopefully get some good conversation here today. So yeah, just as a brief overview of what we're going to be talking about today. So, you know, when someone passes away, you know, unfortunately, on top of the hardships of dealing with that person passing away and, you know, the emotional stress and everything that and grief that goes along with that, there's usually a lot of things that need to be settled in a more logistical financial sense, you know, between cash accounts, investments, life insurance, property. You know, there's a lot of different things that someone may have owned or something that may have been triggered by them passing away, you know, something more like life insurance. So, you know, hopefully before that person passed away, they did some sort of estate planning, some sort of, you know, something to help ease that transition period for their beneficiaries. So today we're going to be talking again, like I said, specifically to Kelly about her experience with when her mother-in-law passed away fairly recently and what that estate settlement was like for them. And we'll touch on how her mother-in-law had all of her estate and property set up to be transferred to the beneficiaries. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, some of the other ways that you can set up before you pass away. And again, neither of us are lawyers, so we're not, you know, giving you legal advice on how you should set up your estate plan. And if you have questions on doing that, you should definitely see a lawyer. That's the type of person who would help you get your estate set up. But yeah, let's start by talking about the different the types of estate planning that your mother-in-law did before she passed away. Like, what did she have set up, or what kind of things did she have in place that were triggered when she passed away?
So I was pretty pretty fortunate in that she was pretty well prepared. Okay. And I know obviously not everybody is well prepared for that sort of thing. But her husband had passed away a few years earlier. And when he passed away, she kind of didn't have any, you know, clue as to what she had as far as assets or anything. So she wanted to make sure that if something happened to her, that her family would know what to do and, you know, where all of the assets and whatnot should go.
Gotcha. So she had already had a chance to really reevaluate what was there and really take take inventory of what there was to be ready with.
Exactly. And that's a good way to put it, is to take inventory, because she was given, from when she went and saw an attorney, because she did go see an attorney, and they discussed the best way that would work for her and her kids, because she had four kids. And they also supplied her with a book, like just a soft cover book, not a lot of pages, mm-hmm. but it allowed her to write down the different assets that she had. And then she could also say, she could write down the account numbers. She could write down who they were with, the value they were at the time. But then she could also go through if there was specific things that she wanted to leave to people. Mm-hmm. She could list them in there. So she was pretty well organized that way. But I think when you go see an attorney, they prepare you pretty well for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So she had seen an attorney, like I said, and in her situation, and like Timmy said, everybody's situation is different. So it is certainly best to see an attorney to see what's going to be best for your situation, because there are many ways that you can set it up. However, the way that my mother-in-law had done it was she didn't have a separate estate, but the way that she had it all set up was she had essentially everything, all the assets that she had, she either had beneficiaries set up or payable on death. And people don't even realize, for example, when you own a property, you can have a property that's payable on death. Mm-hmm. And that worked out pretty well for us because when she died, the property instantly transferred over to who she had it payable on death to. So it was nice because it allowed us to do whatever we needed to do with the property right away without having to worry about going through probate, which we'll talk about more in detail later. But it was really helpful because she also had on her all of her accounts, they were either joint or payable on death as well, which meant we had access to her cash right away, which is important because she did have a mortgage. So that mortgage had to be continued to be paid. Mm-hmm. And we then had access to her funds to be able to pay that without having to dip into our own personal funds to pay that. Mm-hmm. So it worked out really well for us. And the whole process was pretty seamless. I have to say it was very seamless.
Yeah. So since you're just kind of talking about the mortgage and the property, the most there at the end, mm-hmm. when a property has a beneficiary listed on the deed or for it, when someone were to pass, that's supposed to transfer ownership rather than it being in like a will or an estate. How does that affect the mortgage? And you're a good person to talk to about this. How does that affect the mortgage or taking ownership of that property? Because, you know, when you are taking ownership of a property, if there's still a mortgage in someone else's name, that can be a problem if you're trying to do things with that property in the future. So what does that look like? You can tell us about what you guys did or maybe if in a situation where someone's trying to maintain that property, what that might look like.
Yeah. So for us, we ultimately decided we were going to sell her house. Mm-hmm. So what we did is the moment that she passed away, the house transferred to her four sons. She has four sons, and it transferred to all four of them equally. And they were able to use her funds to make that mortgage payment. So the minute she passes, the ownership became the four boys. That doesn't mean, however, that the mortgage or the loan itself transfers into the four boys' names. Mm-hmm. It was just the property itself transfers. Yeah. However,
because that's something I just want to touch on too, that comes up a lot is mortgages are non-transferable. You cannot change on a consumer mortgage. That mortgage is for the person that signed the mortgage.
Correct.
So if property is being transferred ownership, typically something needs to be done with the mortgage. And I know you'll talk about it more, but mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention that because that's something that comes up a lot. And it makes sense when you're like selling a property, obviously you don't own it anymore, so someone else takes over the mortgage. But it is important to note that when someone passes away, you can't just take on their mortgage. That's not how that works.
Right, it isn't. Now, we could continue to make the payments on that mortgage until we sold the house. And you want to do that because otherwise the bank has the house as collateral and can still come after the house. Mm-hmm. So if you stop making the payments, the bank can still come after the house regardless to who owns it because it's pledged for that loan. So you'll want to continue to make those payments. That's important. And then what we ultimately decided was we were going to sell the property, and we did so pretty quickly. We were fortunate that the market was pretty hot, so we were able to sell the house pretty quickly. And the other really nice thing is at that time, the way that she had it set up was, so we the boys took ownership of it when she passed. They take ownership of it and the value of it at that time. So essentially whatever the fair market value is of that time. And because they were turning around and selling it right away, there were no taxes that they had to pay. Yeah. They didn't have to inherit those capital gains or anything like that. So that worked out really well. Versus if you hold on to the property and decide you want to hold on to the property, you do have the possibility that you're going to have some capital gains that you would have to pay if you do decide to sell it down the road.
If they gained value in the time from when you inherited it to when you sold it. Yeah, and that is a state of Wisconsin thing. I know that different inheritance, there's different taxes for different things in every state. Mm-hmm. So that is something to keep in mind. If you are in a different state, there may be different rulings on that. But as of right now in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. that's how it works, which is pretty nice that A lot of inheritance stuff is pretty light on taxes unless you're doing different things with it. But again, we're not accountants, we're not lawyers, so we're not giving you advice on what you should do with that. But so in that situation, yeah, you guys turned it around, you sold it. I'm mm-hmm. sure the four boys split the proceeds after, you know, they paid off the mortgage yep. with whatever they sold it for. Mm-hmm. The difference between that is the amount that they, you know, had in inheritance proceeds, and then they divvied it up between yep. the four of them.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that, you know, kind of going into hypotheticals here, let's say one of the four boys wanted to maintain ownership of the property. Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's say one of them wanted to buy out ownership interest, or, you know, in a simpler case, say your husband was an only child mm-hmm. and he was going to be the sole heir and he wanted to own that property. What do those processes kind of look like yep. to, you know, to maintain ownership? Because as we mentioned, it's you can keep paying on a mortgage in someone else's name, but it's not really a long-term solution.
Correct. It's yeah. not. Yeah. So if it were the situation where my husband was the sole owner and he wanted to keep it, he would then have to essentially refinance it into mm-hmm. his name. So he would want to take that loan that the mother had and refinance it into his name, because that's still money owed on the house. Mm-hmm. And you can do that at any bank. You don't have to refinance it at the bank she had her mortgage at. You can do that anywhere. Mm-hmm. But that's what he would have had to do is to refinance that, so that then that balance would have became his liability. Mm-hmm. Now, in the situation where if he wanted to buy out his other brothers, he certainly could have done that. They would have had to get an appraisal done on the property to see what it's worth. And then he would have had to buy the brothers out for their quarter that they owned. Mm-hmm. And you can do that in various ways. By doing, for example, he could have done a cash out mortgage on that property
yep.
Because there was equity in the house. He could have done a cash out on the house to buy out the other brothers and then yeah. just retained his loan, which was his part of the house.
Yeah, and it's pretty common to, in a case like that, have a lawyer involved to help draft up a purchase agreement so that everyone is getting, you know, settled correctly and everything. You know, a lot of times, depending on how recently the estate stuff was planned, it could be that same lawyer, even if you really
exactly.
wanted. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be whatever, you know, whatever lawyer you're comfortable with. But I had a few situations like that as a lender where, you know, a sibling buying out everyone involved, and you want to make sure that everyone's getting settled, because there are different there's more things involved in that point because it's an actual like buyout. But yeah, just, you know, different situations that could arise and do arise, you know, unfortunately more often than you think they might. So something that you had mentioned is this estate did not have to go to probate. There was no probate for the, her property or for her mm-hmm. assets. What is probate? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so probate in Wisconsin, and again, this is something that's different in every state as well, but probate in Wisconsin is essentially the process, the court-supervised process of divvying up a deceased person's assets mm-hmm. Based on, you know, if they have a will, based on their will, that sort of thing. And it's provided their total assets, or I should say the assets, are in excess of $50,000. Mm-hmm. So if there is something that is not in excess of $50,000, it can go around probate.
Yep.
For example, my mother-in-law, she had a car that was didn't have a payable on death or anything like that. But because that was less than $50,000, it wouldn't have had to go through probate. Mm-hmm. The brothers could have just divvied that up amongst themselves, however they agreed. There's an affidavit that they have to sign that the state provides, and you can get on the state's website. But probate essentially is the court process of divvying up those assets, whether
yeah.
that be according to a will, or if there's nothing in place, then there is a person appointed, a court
yeah.
person appointed to do that.
Yeah, and before we'll talk a little bit about that as well, but something that happened in your case, which is an interesting thing to consider, is in most cases, setting up a payable on death or direct beneficiary supersedes having to go to probate.
Exactly.
So a will still has to go to probate because yep. it's just like a guideline. It's a, you know, it's legally binding. It's done usually by a lawyer, and it says where the assets are supposed to go. But then the lawyer uses the will to then guide the divvying of the assets. It's not, but a listing a beneficiary is on each specific asset or account. You are specifically dictating, you know, you have signed up beforehand that this asset will go to someone. So, you know, say on your checking account, you can have payable on deaths. Like you mentioned, on properties, you can do that in the state of Wisconsin. Or, like you mentioned, if you have joint ownership of something in Wisconsin and in a lot of states, there is joint survivorship rights, mm-hmm. which means if one or more of the owners or signers on some sort of account or asset is alive and the other passes away, the remaining signers and owners just maintain ownership of whatever that is. So on a bank account, if you had a joint bank account with someone and that other person passed away, you're the sole owner of all that money in that account at this point. So that's another thing to consider too. Some people start looking at becoming joint signers on accounts with their parents as they're getting older. That can be dangerous too. We've talked about that a little bit on the elder financial abuse episode of, you know, the difference in a joint signer and an agent, because a joint signer is technically owns that money and owns everything in conjunction with you versus like an agent is acting on your behalf but can still sign. That's a whole other, you know, avenue to go down that we're not really talking about. But let's talk a little bit more. So, okay, you didn't have beneficiaries signed and you didn't have a will or you don't have any legal document telling the lawyer or the court how things need to be settled. So then what happens, you know, it goes to probate, then what happens at that point?
Yeah, so then the court system appoints a court representative to the case, and then they will then divvy it up to the nearest relative, essentially. And therefore, there is no direction as far as who gets what. It just kind of goes to the nearest living relative, and there's no way to say this person gets this much, this person gets this much, because there was nothing in place. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of up to the state of Wisconsin how that'll get divvied up.
Yeah, and that can get messy when it's interstate or if families aren't close. So my wife and I actually had a pretty interesting situation with the condo that we own now. We purchased it from a family friend who was older but didn't really have any family in the area, and it wasn't very close to his family in general. And the only surviving kin was a brother way out east. And so he passed away. There was someone was appointed executor of the estate, but so they were trying to get things settled to get the brother to agree on purchase price, things like that with the executor. But during that, the mortgage wasn't getting paid, like you said, it needs to, and condo dues weren't getting paid. So the condo association had put a lien out against it. The mortgage company was starting to foreclose, so that made things more complicated. So that's another thing to consider, is if you do get involved with it, it doesn't just make it better and cleaner to keep up on those things, that you kind of have to for things to get settled. Because if there are claims out against assets or property, you can't go about settling and, you know, maybe even getting your money until those things get cleared up. And so we got, you know, our whole process got pushed back months and months. And, you know, then as the buyer, it becomes inconvenient. So you may lose a buyer even if you have stuff like that going on. So
yeah, and probate can take a minimum of 6 months, but can go, you know, over 2 years. It depends on the situation and if the family all agrees or not agrees. Mm-hmm. So it can be a long process. So that's why it is nice when you have somebody who's prepared and has given some direction so that you can avoid that from happening.
So in your situation, do you think that having your mother-in-law having just beneficiaries set up, do you think that worked pretty well?
It did. It worked really well. Yeah, because like I said, we had instant access to the cash. The one thing I do want to mention is just to keep in mind is a lot of people sometimes get personal rep confused with being, a POD, payable on death. Personal rep ceases upon death.
Yeah, power of attorney, personal representative, all that stuff.
None of that is valid anymore once the person has died. So that's important, because some people think that, oh, I've got a personal rep, I've got a power of attorney, I'm good. That's only good for when they're alive and if they needed your assistance when they were alive. So the fact that she took it that step further and had beneficiaries and all of that set up, it made it just that much easier, because it was just essentially forms that you had to fill out along with death certificates to send in and then
proof of passing, and then
the funds were transferred over. So.
Yeah. And another thing we haven't even touched on and we're not going to get into because it's pretty complicated is a trust, which is very common with people who have more assets or more properties. Because in short, you know, a trust is effectively a separate legal entity that you set up typically in your own social security number that exists separately from you as its own entity and takes ownership of your assets technically. So like a lot of people will start a trust and then their house will be owned by the trust and their, you know, their checking account will be in the trust name so that if something happens to them or they pass away, there is the trust itself is a legal document outlining the responsibilities that other people or trustees can have. So you can name trustees and successor trustees. It's basically the way I typically described it to people when I was personal banking is, you know, think of it as you're setting up basically like a company, almost like a company to run your money, basically your property and your money. But it's not really a company. It's just it's going to exist if you were to pass or something were to happen to you. And then typically when someone passes, the successor trustees will then settle the trust and divvy out stuff after the fact. But it also allows you to keep using those assets or those properties because they're all still owned by the trust, and you, if you're a trustee, you can still act on it. So it kind of gets rid of that lag room. And that's what a lot of this estate planning does is try to get rid of that lag time and that downtime of when someone passes and you can do anything with those assets.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you set up with a trust, that also avoids probate. Mm-hmm. And that's where you should, like we said, consult an attorney to decide whether it's best to do the estate or whether it's best to do a payable on death. I can say that it's a lot more pricey to set up an estate, but if you have a lot of assets, it might be the better way to go. So certainly consult an attorney on that.
Yeah, and those are the most common ones I've seen in my experience is a trust, a normal like will / estate, or just payable on deaths. But there's more out there. I mean, lawyers are creative. they can get creative with the ways things get handled depending on the situation. So I guess as a final thought here, at what point of life do you think people should start considering their estate planning and naming beneficiaries? I know on some things it's really easy, like on a checking account or on your investment accounts. You can name beneficiaries right when you set them up, even if it's like a sibling or even if it's like you're young and you name your parents, just in case something happens. But, you know, other things like properties and you know, maybe thinking about wills or trusts, like what points in life do you think that people should maybe start considering those things?
It's definitely a hard conversation to have, and it's a hard thing for a person to have to even go through to do. But I do think once you become essentially the sole owner, that's probably the time to start thinking about, I need to do something here, because if something happens to me, this needs to go somewhere. And if you don't have things in order, then that's when it becomes an issue. And that's what my mother-in-law did, is once her husband passed away, she was like, I can't leave this mess to the kids. So she had the wherewithal to think it through and do what she, you know, needed to do to make sure everything was accounted for. So I think when you get into a situation where you are, you know, kind of the sole owner left in things, or even like you said, even as a child or as a teenager or whatever it might be, you open an account, have a payable on death set up, and you can add that onto an account at any time. It's not like you have to do it only when you open the account.
And
you can change them. So it's nothing that's set in stone. You can always add it, change it, or whatnot. But just certainly something to think about for sure as you know, you progress through life.
And it seems pretty common for me is what my experience is when you hit certain milestones to really start considering it. Like, or even early when you buy a house, like maybe you need to figure out who's, you know, do I need life insurance at this point? Maybe to pay off the house if something happens to me, whoever's stuck with it. Or, you know, even if you're married and don't have kids, what happens if something happens to both of us and we have assets that need to be handled? Or, you know, just it is a case-by-case situation, but there's a couple milestones. Getting a house, having kids, and getting close to retirement kind of seem to be the big three I've experienced as well. But with that, do you have any other closing thoughts or anything?
No, I think that's it. Like I said, I know it's a hard conversation to have. It's not anything that's fun to deal with, but it certainly does help those surviving people in the end and helps them get through it. So
I mean, and it's something that if you are the child or the heir to someone who is maybe getting older, as much as a not fun conversation is to have, maybe it's an important conversation to have. I've talked to my parents about it, like, hey, what is your guys' plan if something happens? Because I want to know where to look even, you know, you as the heir should know where to be looking to even start going down that trail.
Yep,
so
exactly.
you know, if you're, especially if you're close and it's someone, you know, like a parent or, you know, grandparent that you know well, it's good to touch base and see where they're at. And if they're not, maybe help them start finding the resources to get those things in place. You know, I would definitely start with financial advisor, accountant, and a lawyer that you trust. Any of those three are a great place to start. You may have to work with all of them, depending on what you have asset-wise. But it's one of those things where, and I feel like we say this every episode, getting things set up beforehand makes it way easier down the line, especially in something like this. So you don't have to go through, you know, 2 years of probate to settle an estate. So
for sure.
But yeah, with that, thank you, Kelly, so much for coming on and talking to us. It was, it's great that you have the expertise in the mortgage realm too, so that we can talk a bit about, you know, settling a mortgage when you inherit a property like that. And if you have any questions or comments or any more questions for Kelly on maybe mortgages or situations you've had come up, you can feel free to reach out to me and I can get you pointed in the right direction. Or again, if you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. You can reach me at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's HEYTIMMY @amindformoney.com. And we hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.